You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.
Good evening, everybody. I hope you've had a fantastic Tuesday. Thanks again for tuning in. So tonight's episode, I am talking with Nim Agalawate. They're the bass slash synth player behind Hamilton-based shoegaze slash indie rock band Basement Revolver, a professional audio technician and LGBTQ plus advocate. You can find Nim on Instagram as Nim Agalawate and Basement Revolver on Instagram, Facebook, and streaming services as themselves. And on Twitter as Bass Revolve Music. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, yeah, no problem.
Yeah. I guess like the first kind of question would be, how would you describe your style as a musician, whether that's like bass or synth or anything else that you play?
Right. I definitely would say I'm primarily a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the instrument I've dedicated the most amount of time to. I started playing like clarinet first and did kind of the whole, you know, like elementary school, high school band class type stuff. So I have that background, but I've been playing bass since I was like 14.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to music school, and studied both electric bass and upright bass.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I kind of did that and then really only just started like learning about synthesis and playing that because I wanted the sound in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like, picked it up from there.
Mm-hmm. You said that you briefly played clarinet. Did you kind of toss that aside?
Kind of. I bought one recently in the pandemic to kind of try and bring it back.
Awesome.
Just for fun. Toss it on like,
mm-hmm,
any random recordings I'm doing or potentially in like some solo music stuff. But yeah, I kind of like when I moved to Hamilton to go to music school, I kind of like focused just on the one instrument at that point. I just figured it's like better to try and get really comfortable in one thing than try and be like a multi-instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
And I've gone through, I listen to so many different types of music, but there's definitely like a few which have like stayed in my listening forever and always will. So like Sufjan Stevens is a massive one for me. I just think he's a very creative songwriter. I love that he isn't stuck into one genre. Like, you know, every time he releases an album, you don't really know what sound it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that really sticks out to me. Under Oath is a massive inspiration. I listened to them like a ton in high school. I used to listen to like a lot of hardcore, post-hardcore punk, that type of stuff. And then another huge influence is the Homeless Gospel Choir. It's kind of like folk punk.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little more political, and I just, like, I really love that aspect of his music.
For sure. When did you first discover your passion for music?
Pretty early on, I would say. Like, I started learning clarinet when I was 8. my dad is a musician. He plays cello, and then my brother was learning cello at that point as well. He's like a couple years older than me. So I knew that I wanted to play an instrument, and my parents were like, yeah, like, we can get you something. We can put you in some lessons. And I just realized that I was like really comfortable with it from a pretty early age and picked it up pretty quickly. And then another part of it was I actually like struggled in school with a lot of the academic type stuff. I've got some learning disabilities, so reading and writing was a struggle for me. And then like music was kind of that safe area where I could just like explore that, and was doing really well in it, so it was really encouraging to me.
You mentioned that your first instrument was the clarinet. How did you come across that?
Part of it was that my brother and my dad played string instruments, so I was like, okay, I don't want to do like the exact same thing as them. And then my brother had a friend who was playing clarinet, so I think I just like randomly gravitated towards it because of that.
Yeah, cool. I actually also played the clarinet when I was younger.
Okay.
But I gave that up after about 3 years because I was horrible. Yeah, I was very bad.
Yeah. It's funny. I started to lose interest in it. Or the reason I picked up bass was because I was listening to more rock-based music.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's no clarinet in that, right?
For sure.
But now I listen to like Andy Schaaf. I'm like, oh. Should have stuck with it, and then I could be like touring with a cool folk band.
I know, right? Why isn't there clarinet in rock? I want to hear more of that. Do you remember when you started creating music? And by any chance, do you remember the first song that you wrote?
I started like probably when I was around 15. I got into home recording, actually. I was really interested in the idea of recording and being an engineer. I had watched some behind-the-scenes videos and DVDs that came with some Under Oath albums, actually. So they had a DVD that came with Define the Great Line, and that was all about like the production side of their album, and I thought that was really inspiring, so I... at that point kind of thought, cool, like I want to go into being an audio engineer. So my parents got me like a little bit of home recording equipment, and I started messing around with that at home. And yeah, I kind of wrote some instrumental stuff at that point. I used to like just write some little folk songs around that time, but yeah, nothing I'd be very proud of now.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm. For sure.
But it was a start.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We all got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
And right now, the way that I personally write, especially like my involvement with Basement Revolver, is I write a lot of like chord progressions or like bass lines. So I think, like, the big part of how I approach song creation is kind of just, like, having a general theme or idea I want to get across, like, emotionally. Like, if I want it to be, like, a darker sound or, like, lighter or poppier or more, like, bouncy. So, because I'm not writing any lyrics in that, I kind of just can think about, like, the soundscape element of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so before, I mean, if I was trying to write everything myself for, like, my own songs, then obviously I'd be thinking more about lyrics, and it would just be kind of, like, singer-songwriter-style things, you know, like, four chords and whatnot. So I've kind of, like, moved away from that, and also, I think, have a lot less structure to the way that I write, which is fun. Sometimes it's like songs don't even need a chorus. Sometimes it can just be like tons of verses in a row, and that type of thing. So
Yeah, totally. Do you remember the music that you listened to growing up or that your family listened to? And do you think that that's had an influence on your current sound?
A little bit, yeah. Like, my dad did listen to a fair amount of like classical music growing up, so yeah, I would have that in the background, but also like the Beatles, Pink Floyd. There is a UK ska band called Madness that both my parents listened to, which was just like really fun and upbeat, so I remember like being really into that as a kid. But yeah, I'm like, in many ways, I think I kind of got a lot of like my own musical preference from finding stuff that was different than what I grew up listening to. And also a very big influence was having an older brother who was into music. He was a drummer. And he started like playing in bands and stuff. So I just kind of like latched onto whatever he was listening to.
Yeah, for sure. Do you still listen to those old influences today?
Yeah, I definitely do. Actually, like, over the past 5 months, I'd say, I've been listening to a lot of, like, throwback music for me. You know, just throwing on, like, and then just listening to any old album I can remember and seeing if I like it still. Mm-hmm. So that's been a fun journey, yeah, and just thinking about, okay, like, what did I resonate with in the past about this? And sometimes, like, it will really hold up, and then sometimes you're like, oh, man, this is, like, kind of junk. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
It's kind of a funny progression I made, because I mentioned that I was interested in going into, like, the engineering side of music, like, the tech side. And then, for whatever reason, I made a big switch when I was in grade 12 of thinking more about music performance, but more from, like, a jazz side. Yeah, I think I had a music teacher, like, a bass private lesson teacher who introduced me to Miles Davis. And I was listening to a lot of that, and yeah, I just thought it was very cool and very like the idea of like studying jazz music. So at that point, it was when I started thinking, okay, maybe I'll go to school for music performance. And at that point was kind of thinking more along the lines of like playing in musical pit bands or doing cruise ships or, like wedding band, like that type of stuff. So it's kind of interesting that I am doing music, but more in line with what I actually grew up with than what I was studying in college. Mm-hmm. And then also that I've gotten into the tech side as well, even though it's not what I actually studied.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Lots of like full circles.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go to school, and how was that program?
Yeah, so I went to Mohawk College. Mm-hmm. And studied music. It's like the applied music program, and it was pretty good for me. And I met a ton of people. I moved to Hamilton, which is where I still live, and honestly, that's probably like the best part about going to college was I found the city that I really love. There's so much like good community here, and like, yeah, it's just so much in that, which I feel like kind of has led to where I'm at within everything I do within music.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you're not from Hamilton. Where did you grow up?
So I was born in England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I moved to Canada when I was 8.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of funny relating back to the music side. I started clarinet in England, which was like a pretty normal age to start it there. And then when we moved here, everyone was really shocked that I was playing it at that age. And it was really hard to find a music teacher who was willing to teach me. Because mm-hmm. they were like, you're too young. So it's just like an interesting thing about how music education works in different countries. Because also at the school I was going to in England, I had private lessons at school. So I don't even remember fully how it worked, but during the day, maybe it was during like a recess or something like that, once a week, I would have a clarinet lesson instead. And like any student could choose to do that if they wanted. So I think that was a really like important foundation for me. I just kind of got used to practicing music and like learning music from a young age. To go back to like the original question, when we moved to Canada, we moved to Oak Ridges, which is between like Richmond Hill and Aurora, so it's GTA. And I lived there until I moved to Hamilton.
Awesome. I think that's a fantastic program to have over there in England because, you know, not only are arts extremely important, but learning an instrument is so healthy for a developing mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's kind of weird that, like, they do get into it here, but a lot of people's first introduction to music in Canada is, and I guess a lot of people might do recorder, but they'll play band instruments. And most people don't want to play the instruments that, like, they're assigned or, like, they have a very limited choice of what they can pick. And that's just, like, the worst way to learn music. Like, you know, you need to be excited about it and inspired to do it. So, that's one thing I am really thankful that I had that early introduction and also took private music lessons like outside of school all the way like through high school. I did that and that's been like a massive influence on me, just like always having that more like structured learning to it. It's just like always being a part of my life.
Were those professional lessons, were those clarinet?
Yeah, like I switched when I got to high school. I started taking like bass lessons outside of school because then I was doing clarinet like in music class.
Do you remember when you joined your first band or started performing solo? I find that a lot of musicians kind of, you know, have a whole bunch of little bands and little acts before they find their, you know, their mainstream one, right? So did you have that?
Yeah, I definitely did. In high school, I started a band called Colored Silence, and that was kind of like, you know, that band for me where, we could just experiment what we wanted. It was a bit more like, you know, like classic rock, alternative rock, that sort of style. It was a trio. But before that, I actually got a lot of playing experience through church. Like, I grew up going to church and was playing in the bands there from a pretty young age. So, like, I think that had a huge influence on me as far as being used to just playing with different musicians and learning new music. And, it's, like, not original music, but just a concept of, like, learning songs and playing them with different people.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many projects you were a part of before Basement?
I'm not even sure, to be honest, because there's, like, so many different, like, some stuff would be super small, but the more noteworthy ones was when I first moved to Hamilton, I joined another band immediately with Chrissy from Basement Involver. So we knew each other growing up, and she had already moved to Hamilton. And she had joined a band called Men of Versailles. And when she found out I was moving to Hamilton, they didn't have a bass player at that point, so she's like, oh, do you want to join my band? So we did that for a few years. That was more of like a folk style band. It was kind of when like Mumford and Sons was really big and like, you know, that type of scene. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and then I also played in a hip-hop band, which was very fun. I played upright in that with an MC called Brett Clausen. He goes by Onglish now. Yeah, so it was his project, and he was MCing, and then we had like a full band. It was called Brett Clausen Presents Lasers. Yeah, so that was like a really cool project, which was probably very different than like anything else that I've done.
Yeah,
so those would be like the most noteworthy ones I was involved with before Basement Revolver.
Right. So you have a bit of a unique family situation since your dad is a musician himself. But how did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
Really well. And my parents, so my mom is a visual artist. So I think with having both like artistic parents, they were really supportive of me studying music. And I think both my parents actually considered going to school for art-based programs and then didn't. And they're obviously like happy with what they're doing now. They both kind of work in the tech industry, but I think that's a big reason of why they were so supportive of me doing music, was they could have seen themselves doing that at one point in their life. So there, and then friends, I feel like everyone just assumed that was what I would do.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you create any solo work of your own, or do you plan on eventually doing that?
Yeah, I just sort of started to. I started a project called Sound of Separation, which at the beginning actually was a band. I was collaborating with drummer Nigel Stewart and guitarist David Joyner. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like, I was playing synths in that, and it was sort of like ambient instrumental music. And then since then, I've kind of turned that into like my solo project, and that's all electronic based. So yeah, I'm just sort of experimenting with what that is, and it's kind of cool having a platform where I can do whatever I want with it. So far, I've mostly just done like a few live sets, which are all mostly like improvised, and just throw like small little videos up on YouTube or Instagram. But I do eventually want to make a full release, whether it be like an EP or an album. Yeah, and that would be probably like all instrumental, more on like the ambient side of things.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who would you compare your style on that solo work to? Are there any musicians that kind of come to mind?
I'm big on influences for that style that I do would be like Boards of Canada and Explosions in the Sky. Mm-hmm. Like that type of stuff. Yeah.
So when did you meet the members of Basement Revolver?
So I think I mentioned earlier, Chrissy and I knew each other from back home. So mm-hmm. I have actually known Chrissy since I was 8, since I moved to Canada. We were a part of the same church growing up. So yeah, we've been friends for many years. She's kind of the oldest friend that I have, which is really cool. And then the fact that we've also like collaborated on a few different music projects together. In high school, we were like, it was one of us friends that we would always share music with each other. That was a really cool experience. And like, yeah, we've been very big influences on what each other listened to. And then the other members I met through going to Mohawk. Originally, Basement Revolver was Chrissy and I, and then our friend Brandon Monroe. He was drumming. in a band, and he was in the same year as me at Mohawk. And then the band was the three of us for quite a few years, and at one point we just kind of decided it was time to add another member, because in the studio we had always added a few extra guitar parts, and things, or just wanted to fill out the live sound. So we already knew John, like I knew him from Mohawk, and so did Brandon, so we auditioned a few people, but John was kind of like who we hoped we would land with the whole time. So really happy he's joined the project. And then throughout this past year, we've had a bit of like a member change. So Levi is now drumming with us, and I also met him through Mohawk, although he was closer with John because Levi was in first year when I was in third year. So I kind of like met him and knew who he was, but we hadn't really like hung out or anything too much until he joined the band.
Mm-hmm. Right. When did you guys decide to put the band together? What was that conversation like?
So, it was probably like a year or two after Men of Versailles had fizzled out, which was the band that Chrissy and I had together before. In between, we both played along with our friend Simon Fallon, who's in Men of Versailles. And he started doing his own solo music. And I think from there, that was when Chrissy decided that like she wanted to start writing her own stuff and releasing it, because in Men of Versailles, it was kind of like a co-writing situation between her and Simon. So Chrissy wrote the first Basement Revolver song, which was Words, and uploaded that, I think, just to Facebook, and like created like a band page and all of that. And then I messaged her and was like, oh, this is really cool, like, do you want to collab on this? So that's kind of how she started it as a solo project. And then I joined in the first ever Basement Revolver show that we did. It was just the two of us, and that was the Redeemer Battle of the Bands, which we won. And one of the prizes for that was a set at Supercrawl. So that was a really cool experience. But when we knew it, we were going to play Supercrawl, we're like, okay, maybe we should find a drummer and like fill out the sound a bit more. So that's kind of when we decided to make it like a band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have like a shared vision for what the band would be like, what it would sound like, what kind of visuals you would have for the band, or like your sort of aesthetic?
Not really. We kind of always approached it as it just being whatever it turned into. It was very funny early on where we would get a bunch of comparisons and people would say like, oh, I do listen to this band or whatnot. And we'd be like, oh, we've never even heard of that. So like neither Chrissy and I really knew anything about shoegaze. And we just kind of accidentally started writing that type of music, which is very cool. But now we listen to a lot of that, and it's a bit more intentional, the type of sound that we're going for. But early on, we just kind of left it very open. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I feel like our aesthetic has also kind of just changed throughout the years, just based on like wherever we're both at.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys share mutual musical influences?
Yeah, we grew up listening to like a lot of the same bands. There's obviously like some variants where maybe one band would be like someone's favorite, but it would still be something that the other one listens to. But yeah, a lot of those bands I mentioned earlier are all stuff that like Chrissy would listen to as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time that you sort of gained traction with Basement, or the first time you kind of got excited about a project or some feedback or maybe some, you know, views or plays online?
Mm-hmm. So one of our first first shows was at the Baltimore House, which sadly isn't around anymore. It was a really great smaller venue, but like bands could set up their own shows there and it not be too intimidating because it was like, you know, a decent size room, but still had a good PA system and stuff. So, yeah, we were on a bill with a band called Allegories, which is Adam Bentley and Jordan Mitchell, and they really liked our sound. And I had met both of those people before, but I didn't really know what they did or what their like role was in the music scene. And then found out that they had just opened up their own recording studio called Tape, and Adam Bentley has his own like PR company called Archer Research. So that was kind of the spur of things that they said they really liked our sound and would be interested in recording our stuff. So we recorded the first EP with them, and Adam Bentley did PR for us, and that's sort of where it all blew up. Like, the first song we released officially was Johnny, and that kind of blew up on Spotify at that point. I think it was pretty early days of, like, Spotify being more widely used, and also, like, people kind of getting the concept of playlists and blogs making their own playlists and things. So, yeah, we just got really lucky with the timing of the, like, the sound we were doing and where Spotify was at, because that song just got, like, shared like crazy. And I think now it's, like, at 600,000 plays, something around there. But it shot up to that point, like, you know, within a couple, well, most of those listens were probably within, like, the first year, which is kind of wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah, so definitely that, and we were getting, like, some good blog posts and reviews. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where did the name Basement Revolver come from?
It's kind of funny. So Chrissy was living in a basement apartment at that point and was... I think she had already written that song and then was just trying to think of a name to release it under. So she was just kind of scrambling, like, okay, what do I want to name this? And she looked over and saw a tag of a vintage clothing line that our friend had called Raw Wind Revolver, which is, that clothing brand was the original name of what is now Daddy's Plastic, Nabby's vintage line,
right?
From Elevator, and Chrissy was like, okay, that's kind of like a cool name, so she just thought, okay, Basement Revolver, I'll just like take those two things and kind of put it together.
Yeah super cool.
It is funny, like, less so now, but at the beginning, like, people would think that we got it from like, if it was a gun reference, or, like, yeah, you know, was it Velvet Revolver? What's the other?
Yeah, Velvet Revolver, yeah.
Yeah, people thought that we, like, took influence from that, which we didn't at all.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What do you think is special about Basement?
I think that idea of what I was saying before, how we haven't really necessarily tried to be any specific thing, comes through in the music of just being a very authentic and raw. So I think definitely that aspect. And also Chrissy, I think she is like a very incredible songwriter, and like a lot of people say they really resonate with her lyrics, and I think her voice complements them really well. So yeah, I would say definitely like that. And even the fact that when we started, we weren't really even trying to get any traction. Like, we were just friends writing music, and it kind of got to the point where we're like, oh, we should try and pursue this more because it seems like that's an option. But because we weren't seeking that out, I think just the authenticness of that kind of shows through, where sometimes bands, you can tell when, like, you know, they're trying to make a radio-friendly, like, hit or, you know, writing with all of that stuff in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
For sure. So we're just going to take a second here and play a recent single from Basement Revolver. Wax and Digital is a single off of their 2019 EP by the same name, about being in love and the fear of someday losing your partner. Just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Nim Agalawadi, the bassist for indie rock / shoegaze Hamilton based band Basement Revolver, audio technician and a queer advocate. So your band Basement Revolver are signed to Hamilton based label Sonic Onion. When were you approached by the label?
I think we reached out to them first, but just on very loose basis, where like a lot of people we knew and were working with already knew Tim from Sonic Onion. And it's funny, the first, and I think he had maybe seen us before, or at least heard our music, but we were scheduled to play a rooftop show at Dr. Disc for an art crawl, and that show got rained out, but we were like, you know, had a bunch of friends who were ready to see us that day. And we were like all packed up, ready to play a show. So we ended up just doing a house show at our friend Jay Jillard's house. And Tim came to that. We were like, okay, you were going to check us out anyway. Do you want to come to this house show? So it was cool. And we chatted and yeah, they were interested in it. And I think one of the biggest reasons we wanted to go with Sonic Onion was the fact that they were local. And that's been so nice as far as like having meetings and stuff. And obviously not this past year, but in the past, being able to do all of that stuff in person rather than online, where I know some folks whose managers, like, you know, live at the other side of the country or something. So it's just a very different vibe.
Yeah, for sure. Who is your manager and how long did the signing process take?
So Tim manages us from Sonic Onion, which has been very nice. Like, yeah, he had so many connections and like history within the Canadian music scene, and then specifically within Hamilton, GTA area. I think for us, it was a pretty quick process. We already had the album Heavy Eyes written, so we kind of approached it with like, we have this album that's all recorded, mixed, mastered. We just want someone to help release it. So I think that kind of like streamlined the process a lot, because, you know, there's like a release already there, all like neatly packaged up, and then the agreement for Sonic Onion to help release it was pretty smooth.
What has been the biggest reward that you gained from being a part of Sonic's team?
One of the biggest things is honestly like just having the support of other people, and being in a band, you have to play so many different roles if you're doing it at this level. And having management and a label takes so much of that stress off your plate, so we're able to focus more on the music. Where if you're self-managing or trying to do like independent releases, like I know there's a big trend of bands doing that right now, which I think is awesome, but I'm not interested in doing that whole business side of it. It kind of like hurts my brain, stresses me out a ton, gives me a lot of anxiety. So like, being able to leave that to people who are willing to do it, excited to do it, have the actual skills to do it well, relieves a lot of stress for us personally, and then also allows us to really focus on the parts which we want to, which is the music.
I know that a big opportunity that you guys were given as being a part of the Sonic team was your Germany tour. When was that and how did that go?
I don't remember exactly. It was probably in 2019, I think, in the fall. And that was incredible. And that definitely did come from being on a more recognized label. And we played like a Canadian showcase, so being on a Canadian label like obviously helped us get into that position. Yeah, it was awesome. And we've been lucky. We've played a few showcase type festivals. We played the Great Escape in the UK, and then Reeperbahn in Germany, and New Colossus in New York. And those are just really cool environments to go to, because everyone going there is kind of expecting to hear new bands. They're not going in there to look for, like, to listen to a band that they already know. So it's just like a really cool vibe. And then there's also industry and meeting, like, other bands. It's really funny when you, like, play all these festivals and end up, like, hanging out with bands you know from Canada in Germany, like I think Lost Cousins was there, Sky Wallace. We played with Begonia in Germany and then in Montreal like 2 weeks later, which is just like really surreal. Yeah, and it was an awesome experience. And then just to like, see a different culture and like play there. And I think the music culture is a bit different in Europe, where people are really excited about new music, where I feel like Canada is a lot harder for that. And like these festivals is kind of what Canadian Music Week should be, but isn't. Like, I don't really know many people who go to Canadian Music Week just to like find new bands, which is really unfortunate.
Right. If you could choose one other country to tour next, where would that be?
I knew so many. And I think, honestly, doing more of the U.S., we've kind of done, like, we've played New York a few times, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, and St. Paul. I think that's all the American cities that we've done. So going west and south would be amazing. Yeah, just because that's like obviously such a huge market, right? So I think, yeah, just expanding more into the U.S.
Yeah, for sure. So you touched on this a little bit before, but we haven't talked a whole bunch about your behind the scenes work in the Hamilton music community. I know you work at the Casbah as an audio tech. What got you into that?
Sorry, actually, me working at the Casbah came directly from a Basement Revolver show. So our first EP release, we did at the Casbah, which was an amazing show. Greywater played with us, who are no longer a band, and then Ethan Paxton opened up the show. Yeah, and that was like a really great experience. And I played at the Casbah a bunch in past bands, but that was like probably one of the best turnouts we had had up until that point. And that night there was actually like a fill-in sound tech, because the main tech was unavailable. And I remember just talking to the owner after the show, being like, oh, if you ever need fill-ins in the future, like, I am a sound tech as well. So that's how I started working at Casbah. Like, he was like, oh yeah, we actually would love to have a second tech to kind of fill in slots. And I started working there like that summer. So
Do you work for any other venues or like on a freelance basis at all?
Yeah, so like, even through the Casbah, like, it's still kind of a freelance position. Like, it's sort of my main gig, but yeah, I'm not like a full-time like employed tech, which is really nice. It just gives me the opportunities to do things outside of that. There's a music organization called Zula who I've been doing some work with, and hopefully we'll do some things with this summer, down at the Bayfront, which is more like jazz based. And I was doing some like tech work at McMaster through the LR Wilson Hall. But that was mostly, there'd be occasional like concerts, but it was mostly lectures and things. So.
Do you think that your work behind the scenes as an audio tech has improved your work as a musician?
Yeah, definitely. One, just having the knowledge of how like PA systems work and sound checks and all that, like having that knowledge, I feel like makes it a lot smoother. And the conversations that like, yeah, we have the text, like, I know all the language that they use. So it just makes a lot of those things, like, a lot smoother and easier. I also kind of pack up all of our gear or, like, think about things in a way which will make setup and tear down a lot faster and smoother. Yeah, so just, like, all those small things definitely helps the band.
Mm-hmm. Around like a year and a half ago, I don't exactly know when it was, but you came out publicly and like online publicly as bisexual. And ever since you've been a passionate like LGBTQIA plus advocate, do you remember the first time that you sort of questioned your sexuality?
Yeah, and I think I questioned it throughout high school and then onwards, but yeah, just never really like knew a name for that. And then I think especially at that point, like the concept or idea of being bisexual was less of a thing. So it's either you were like gay or straight, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not gay, so like I'm not fully gay, so I must be straight. Yeah, and then just like growing up, being older and realizing, like, as there's a lot more education and knowledge around sexuality and how much it's, like, a spectrum, I realized that, like, I'm a part of that. And, yeah, it just felt important for me to name it and just, like, truly be myself. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I'm very glad to see more Hamilton bi representation. And as a fellow bi person, but not someone who speaks about it really online, more out of privacy than anything, why did you decide to come out online?
I think for me personally, it was a bit easier as far as like not having the conversation over and over again with different people.
Sure.
But also I think growing up in the church where that kind of isn't typically accepted, and that's something which I've wrestled with a lot. It felt like an important thing for me, and also to speak up to people who maybe aren't as supportive or don't understand or think that they don't know anyone who's queer. So it's just like, you probably do. So yeah, I think it was kind of like a lot of those types of elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I confirmed this earlier. Was that a Christian church or a Catholic church?
Yes.
Or Christian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, over the past year, you've been exploring your gender identity online.
Yeah.
And so you've recently begun identifying as non-binary and started using they, them pronouns. And that's, you know, also something you've been speaking about on social media. Do you remember the first time you experienced gender dysphoria?
I think also like from a young age, like question that. And I think that even earlier, like as being a young kid, thinking about like the types of toys that I wanted to play with or that type of stuff and realizing it, there were all these ideas of what like a boy should be, which is, you know, how I was identified with from birth. And yeah, it's interesting, kind of gone through different seasons of like that affecting me more or less. And then it's a very similar thing with like now as I'm older and as like the world kind of progresses, there's so many more conversations about like the gender spectrum. And you know, like growing up, I had no clue that like being non-binary was a thing. So I wouldn't have known that that was me at that point. So yeah. And I do feel like that side is still a lot newer to a lot of folks, which I think is one of the reasons that I feel it's important for myself to talk about it, or at least because I'm comfortable sharing it, it can be helpful for the community. Just like, you know, if more people know that they actually know someone who's non-binary, like that can be helpful in their journey and being more accepting of that.
Mm-hmm. How have friends, family, and peers reacted to your identity? Did you have yourself finding to explain yourself to anyone?
I've actually had a really positive experience with that, which has been really nice.
Good.
I was nervous about like sharing it with family, but yeah, they've been supportive, and I kind of like set myself up in a good way where it's like I don't necessarily want like questions, or these are some resources to go to, so I don't have to do that work. So I feel like that's been like a good way to go about things. And then also I've been really fortunate to have very supportive housemates, and they were like the first people I talked to about like exploring my gender identity, and like I asked if we could just start practicing using they them pronouns for me so I could see if that felt right before I had done that anywhere else. So I feel very fortunate that I've been able to like have that experience in that setting to explore things in like a safe, non-judgmental space.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic. I'm very happy to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
Well, one thing, I guess, when does this actually air?
Yeah, this will be airing, let me look at my schedule here, I guess on the 6th of July.
Okay, so unfortunately, just too late, I'm a part of the Hamilton Pride variety show that's happening June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that stays online, and then if it is, that would be through Pride Hamilton on YouTube.
Yeah.
So that was like a solo set for Sound of Separation. And based on Involvers, we have a whole new album written. That will start to be released soon. So yeah, no concrete dates to announce yet, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
Awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're really excited that, and we're very fortunate. We actually recorded the album last summer. We like all got tested and rented an Airbnb in Toronto when we were in the studio, and like had zero contact with anyone other than the engineer when we were there, and brought all our own groceries. So yeah, very fortunate that we were able to still like go through that process and record during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I love your guys' music, so I'm excited about that. Yeah. So you guys can find Nim on Instagram as Nim Agalawati, and Basement Revolver on Instagram, Facebook, and all streaming services as themselves, and on Twitter as Bass Revolve Music. To wrap things up, I've got a throwback Basement Revolver track for you. Johnny is the band's most streamed single and is a song from 2016 about jealousy and heartbreak.
Hey everyone, this is Nim from Basement Revolver, and you're listening to Hot Shot on the Air on 101.5 The Hawk.